Welcome to the second episode of Real Tennis Fan, the podcast. I had a lot of good response from last time around, but the one major complaint was that it was too long. So this time around, I made sure I put a clock in front of me so that I know exactly when I start and so that I can really and truly try to bring this down to an hour. So hopefully all goes well today and that we all enjoy ourselves and that I get more positive response and feedback. Not a lot of people commented on the postings, but I would appreciate I got some email feedback and I really appreciate it. And I'm going to say I want to keep up the good work and hopefully it can grow better. As I'm doing this, I guess I should probably give a shout out to some of my main fans who have been with me from the beginning and as well as some of the new ones. But I want to say a special shout out to Andrine, Sam, Tien, Kino, and James McNeil. They've all been there. I hope I didn't forget anyone. They've all been there from the beginning or near the beginning. And they've supported me all the way. And they've been Reels fans. And they've always commented. And as well as some of the new ones like Janina. And hopefully we get more fans. Don't forget you can follow me on Twitter. On Real Tennis Fan, you can follow me on blog, WordPress, as well as Facebook. I definitely can do with some more likes and following. Last time around as well, I was a little bit, my throat was dry after talking for like an hour and a half. So this time around, I made sure I lubricate my throat with some ice cream, and I have lots of water, so hopefully we can get on the way. But before we go anyway, I would like to take a word from our sponsors. Yeah, unfortunately, we don't have a sponsor right now. So hopefully someone can listen to this podcast and put some sponsors and give us some money, because I don't know if you know this, but tennis may give me the thrill, but tennis doesn't pay my bills. So people, I would really need some money, some whatever the money. So where can we start? I know one of my friends complained that she found that the Reels news wasn't so exciting. So she would hope that's like a little bit more excited. So let's get to it. Let's deal with the men tournament last week. Well, this week we only have 1 week to deal with, so that should be really easy. But the biggest tournament of last week was definitely Dubai in Dubai, because it was where Roger Federer and Novak Djokovic, number one and two in the world currently, made their first appearance in the Australian Open. Of course, you know, Novak won, Federer lost in the third round. We need not be reminded of that unfortunate fact. But they both played pretty well, I think. In fact, they got to the final. But it was also a big standout week for a couple of the players and also some continued disappointment for others. Golbis hasn't won a match all year long. He is 0-5 in 5 tournaments. But however, youngster coming up, Borna Koric from Croatia, he dismantled Loch Ness Monster in Dubai, 6-1, 6-3. In fact, he won 7 straight games after the opening game, which Murray barely won. It was crazy. I mean, this was a beatdown. There's no other way around it. And Borna Koric, he's 18 years old, has now beaten another top player. As you can remember, last year in Basel Indoor, he beat Di Vidal. And he grabbed Di Vidal's wig, and Federer was able to win his probably 20th, I don't know. He won another Basel title, his favorite hometown title. But Borna Koric seemed to be able to play really well when it comes to the big guy, but unfortunately, when it comes to the small fry, he's not playing because he lost in the qualifier of this tournament in Dubai and only got to the third round because Marcos Baghdatis pulled out. So he had no business being in the tournament altogether, but somehow he made it to the third round. He made it to the semifinals, but he eventually lost to Federer 6-1, 6-2. You know, Daddy Federer knows how to deal with babies, especially since he has 4 on his own. So Koric was not going to pull his weight. But Djokovic got through to the final, as to be expected. He faced Berdych in the semifinal, which was kind of was going to be a no-brainer. But I have to say, you have to give a shout-out to, first of all, Borna Koric for his great performance. He's moving up the ranking. And I also have to give a shout out to Tomas Berdych, or I would say for Colin Berdych, for not getting his ass beat down badly. I mean, yes, he still lost to Djokovic in the semifinal, but after that six love, or that old love bagel he took in the first set, he really tried his best not to get blown off the court, and he took it to third set where he lost 6-4, I think. 4-6, sorry, in the third set. So that's pretty good for him. Give him a shout out. But the best finals, I think, was really Djokovic and Federer. I must say, as much as I love Federer, whenever Federer is playing any of the top guys, it's usually a treat to watch, whether he wins or loses, because his matches are never, they don't have any of that bullshit, no back and forth madness. It's just pure tennis. And whoever plays Federer, it's all about the tennis. There's no semantics. There's no off-court drama. You would never have a Federer match with going on about more of what, where they talk as much about what happens off of the court as opposed to what's happening on the court. So he and Novak played, and they played a solid match. And in fact, the match really brought out the best in the guys. I mean, Federer saved 7 break points, and he broke 2 of 2. You know, it's crazy when Federer breaks, it goes 100% on break points. So I have to give it up for my buddy, Mr. Federer. He won his 7th Dubai title. And because he's Federer, he's going to get it. He gets one of those as well. Next thing tournament I guess we can talk about is Acapulco. Ferrer won another 500 title point, 500 ATP 500 tournament. This is his third title of the year. He's won Doha, Rio de Janeiro, and now this week again he won Acapulco. I have to say, Ferrer is looking buffer than I've ever seen him. He's over 30 and he's added a lot of more muscles, I should say. He's always had muscles, of course. Apparently, he has changed his training pattern. I'm not entirely sure what that means. I don't know if it means that he now trains in a circle instead of diagonal, but apparently, since we saw Ferrer last year in November or late October for the year-end championships, in a matter of 3 months, 2-3 months, Ferrer has added more muscle on account of his new training pattern. But it ain't for me to say anything more than that. I'm just simply reporting the facts. Anyway, they had another standout performance by a relatively young, I don't want to say unknown, but a young up-and-coming Ryan Harrison. Again, Grigor Dimitrov is playing bullshit when on court. After showing so much promise in the beginning, Dimitrov has been doing bullshit all week long. He got himself bageled by Ryan Harrison. I don't know what the fuck is going on in your life when you have Ryan Harrison giving you a bagel in the third set and you're supposed to be in the top 10. I mean, for me to get bageled by Ryan Harrison in the third set, it has to mean that I've lost an eye and the limb. This is just absolutely ridiculous. And what was even more ridiculous was when Ryan Harrison got to the semifinal, he played David Ferrer. Wonderful set 6-4, if I'm not mistaken. And then got his ass. Harrison did not win a single game henceforth. He lost 12 straight games. Got double bageled in his ass by Ferrer. I don't know, but anyway, Harris is not that great of a player, but I think he could have at least won a couple games in either of those sets. But apparently he had other same games in mind. Then we have in the finals, Kei Nishikori showed up in the finals. As a matter of fact, let me not say that. I think we should say the spirit of Kei Nishikori showed up in the final, because some doppelganger was there. Kei Nishikori played absolute shit in that final. He barely held serve. He was making ridiculous errors. In the end, he was able to scrape through, I think, in straight set. I think something like 6-3, 6-4, something of that manner. But he didn't even win a set, which was really crazy. But I don't even want to talk about it. Because it's not like I dislike Ferrer or I love Nishikori any more than that. But I keep expecting Nishikori to do better than what I'm seeing. What I'm seeing is a lot of bullshit play. I'm not seeing any real commitment. I don't know if it's a physical issue, but I suspect, at least in my opinion, it's more of a mental issue, but, you know, that's just me. But anyway, let's give David Ferrer a round of applause for winning another title. I think he has the most title on tour this year so far. He's really trying to get his ass up there to move up in the rankings, back up to number five or somewhere in the world. He doesn't like being in the lower end of the top 10 because that means he has to play a lot of tougher guys in the earlier rounds. And David Ferrer used to be a main fixture in the quarterfinal stages of majors, so he's looking to get that back in his repertoire to be a quarterfinalist at major. The other tournament was in Argentina, but ain't nothing much to talk about in Argentina because Vidal showed up like late to the final, and he was playing his boyfriend Juan Manuel in the finals. I mean, this to me was they might as well have just give him Vidal the title before it began, because I don't know how Juan Manuel ended up in the finals. I don't know how. Supposedly he won his matches, but anyway, I know this final wasn't gonna be anything. Actually, the major drama for the final was actually that rain came and basically held up the finals, and Vidal refused to play in rain on a clay court surface. I mean, can you believe such bullshit? I mean, Vidal complaining about playing on clay when it's raining. Anyway, I guess he figured that the rain would have helped Monaco game, because to be quite honest with you, Monaco has never beaten Vidal. In fact, he's 1-6 against Vidal, and that one victory is actually a retirement by Vidal. In fact, I don't know. It's just some bullshit. I mean, like, in the last three matches they've played, Monaco's won like 7 games in 8 sets. He had 3 bagels, 3 breadsticks, and 2 pieces. He's never won more than 2 games. I mean, so I was surprised he won 6-4, 6-1, another breadstick, but. Anyway, I guess if we must congratulate Nadia Vidal for winning a Clicko title. I believe it's his 49th title of his career. Clicko career, I believe. I may be wrong, or 44. But somewhere in the 40s, if I'm not mistaken. And hopefully this get his life back together, because he hasn't won a title for the years yet. And he's been really struggling. In fact, I think this is his first title since the French Open. I might be wrong about this, because I don't think he won anything thereafter. So yes, it could be his first title since the French Open. So he's extremely happy with this sort of performance. So yes, that takes care of the men. And on to the ladies. The biggest thing of the ladies was definitely Doha. Venus was playing well. Actually, let me take that back. Venus was playing decent tennis. I refuse to believe that when Venus is playing well, if she's playing 3-set matches, I don't give a shit if she got Sjogren syndrome. Venus is not supposed to be struggling against the like of some God knows who, some nobodies in the first and second round, and playing 3-set matches. She has no business doing that, especially her with Barbara Zavalova. I hope I said that right. Zavalova Strikova. I guess that was the biggest drama in the end. Venus and her got into a little tiff at the net. Strijova thought that Venus was taking too long to call for challenge, and she complained mercilessly to Eva Azaraki, and Eva Azaraki wasn't having any of it. And then she started to curse Eva Azaraki and call her a horrible person. Give her a penalty, give her a warning for violation. But anyway, Venus won all the way, and she made it through. She beat Radwanska again in 3 sets, and she made it all the way to the semifinal. She faced Vika. Actually, she had a winning record against Victoria Azarenka, but unfortunately, this time around, she got her ass handed to her. Venus won the first set 6-2, and then I don't know what the hell she did thereafter. She didn't hold serve until midway through to the third set. And it was near facing losing the third set 1-6 that she got her life together, won 3 straight games, a couple of games together, and was able to make the score 2-6, 6-2, 2-6, 6-4, 4-6, sorry. So Azarenka got into the final against Safarova, and I'm happy to say that Lucy Safarova won a title over Victoria Azarenka. I am happy because I like Lucy Safarova when I'm not calling her Lady Gollum. She's the ex-girlfriend of Tomas Berdych, if you may remember. I call her Lady Gollum. But I think of the past year or so, within the last 8 months or so, she has definitely been working really hard to get her life together. And I'm really impressed by the work that she's put in. She made it to the semifinals of Wimbledon last year. I think she made probably the round of 16 or quarters for French Open. So I'm definitely hoping that this year be a big turnaround and she definitely get her life together. So Safarova beat Vika 6-4, 6-3. The other ladies tournament was in Acapulco, but to be quite honest with you, I didn't give two shits what's going on over there. I mean, other than Maria Sharapova, but then she pulled out. I suspect because she ate part of that bagel that Harrison gave her boyfriend, Dimitrov, so she got sick. And she pulled out of the semifinals where she was facing Caroline Garcia, and Garcia was playing, I believe it was Timia Batsinski from Switzerland. Yes, Switzerland have a female tennis player, like I mentioned. I know they're quite surprising. I don't know who they are, but apparently they're out there. Anyway, Batsinski beat, what's her name? Beat Caroline Garcia 6-love in the second set. I mean, Garcia, she's from France. You need to get your life together, girl. I mean, like, you're young, you have a good game, but you do keep doing shit when the big moments. I don't get it. So get your life, get it together, and get the fuck over whatever issues you have, because this is not cute, okay? So I guess that takes care of much of the real news. I hope that was a little bit more exciting. We have room for improvement, but hopefully we can get going. We have special guests this evening, and hopefully I can get them here. But I think they would come up a little bit later. Let me see if I can get my guests in right now. And while I do that, we can... Yes, I send out my invitation for my guests so that we can deal with some of the real drama. I'm not sure if we would have enough time today to do a special segment because I'm trying to keep it an hour. So hopefully this works out fine today. So the first real drama we have today is Sam Querrey, aka the Grinch Who Stole Christmas, is going on Celebrity Matchmaker, Millionaire Matchmaker, sorry, I shouldn't be correct. I believe it's an American quote-unquote reality TV show on, I believe, Bravo or We Women's Entertainment. I don't know, one of those cable channels. Anyway, Sam Querrey and Millionaire Matchmaker. Now, first and foremost, I read this, and the first thing that, I mean, several things crossed my mind, but the first thing that crossed my mind was just like, is Sam Querrey a millionaire? I mean, seriously? I think Roger Federer, millionaire. I think Djokovic, millionaire. I even think David Ferrer, millionaire. Kinishikori, millionaire. Venus Serena, millionaire. Maria Sharapova, millionaire. But Sam Querrey? No. I don't know. Did not think so. But apparently... I was wrong in this regard. Apparently, when I checked the figures, Sam Querrey became a professional in 2006 and has made $5.8 million in his career. So I did the breakdown. So since 2006 to 2015, that's 9 years on tour. He's 27. He has made roughly on average $647,662 and change a year since 2006. Now, I don't know if that really qualifies you to being a millionaire, because to me, you kind of have to make a lot of money. You know, you have to make millions of dollars a year, at least a million a year. But, you know, whatever. I don't know the rules of this engagement. I mean, Sam Querrey is not that cute, so I think he can need all the help he's going to get. But seriously, I mean, Sam Querrey, you're an athlete. If you can't get pussy by just putting your name out there as being an athlete, I mean, I don't know what much millionaire matchmaker is going to do for your life. I mean, like, if you're a professional athlete, you're supposed to don't need a millionaire matchmaker. You just need millions. That's all. If you're a professional athlete, the millions would take care of the matching. And as a matter of fact, all you'll be trying to match is basically panties to bras that you got all over your apartment. You really don't need a millionaire matchmaker, but he seems to think this is funny and it's a lark, and he's going to be trying to I don't know how successful that is, because I really don't spend my time watching such garbage, but apparently it's happening out there. So I'm querying, we're gonna have to give you a sad horn for this bullshit. Yeah, but if you can't make your millions that you have, your 5.8 million, and you're being a professional tennis player, and you're being 6'6 and 27 years old, I mean, granted, you're not cute. You know, I mean, look, people are gonna get mad, but you know, I believe his parents probably think he's a good looking guy, but in the today's standard, he's not cute. He's not. He's not hideous. He's not a beast. He's a Grinch. Sorry. Just check it out. I mean, I'm not trying to be hater here. I'm just trying to keep it real. There's no shade. But you know, if you can't make all those things work for you, Sam, I mean, with you know, yeah. You're supposed to be knocking pussies off with a stick, okay? You're not supposed to be eating. But I don't know if that's your thing, but since you're a millionaire matchmaker and you're trying to get with a girl, I'm going to assume that's what you're trying to go for. So I'm not going to say anything more beyond that point. So let's just moving on to... Yeah, so next topic, I guess, would be Andy Murray. Now, there is no secret that I wouldn't say I have a love-hate relationship with Andy Murray. I'm rather indifferent to Andy Murray, aka Loch Ness Monster, or as I call him these days, Loch Ness Murray, the man from Scotland. I mean...
Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
So, I was just about to get into the tea about Murray. So recently, if I'm not mistaken, Loch Ness Murray made some recent comments regarding his... that he's finding it difficult, you know, getting his life together because, you know, it's difficult to practice when he goes home to Glasgow. There's no one to hit with, you know, because Amelie doesn't travel with him always. I think he was dealing, I think this was in response to his beatdown by Bona Corridge, the 6-1, the breadstick and three-piece biscuit he got with in Dubai. He was making this commentary report about, you know, this is what he felt, you know, like, you know, when he go home, it's difficult, and he's trying to get an assistant coach to be with him when Amelie is not around, and he's trying to find the right fit again. So, I mean, I have my views on this matter, but, you know, just want to hear what you have to say in that regard. Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. So I'm just interested, to my real fan, this is one of my real friends, Andreen. She is solely tennis travel, amazing blogger. She goes all over, she lived the life I want to live. She goes around the world and travel and see tennis matches when she can. And we all aspire to be living in her life. But so she's graced us with her presence today, far from my poor introduction, to give us some real insight into some of the real drama that we talk about each week. Well, our second week. So, what do you have to say about Loch Ness Murray, Andreen?
Well, you know, it's weird. This is based on this piece that I guess has come out recently, right? I've heard a lot of comments about it being one of the most interesting pieces that people have read on Andy. Which means I really want to read it because, you know, it's hard to find really compelling pieces of writing about Andy Murray. Not because he's not compelling, but I just, you know, I don't know, somehow or another, his pieces tend to not do too much for me. I don't know. I mean, I think that's a reasonable thing, right? I mean, apparently, given today's announcement about hitting partners, I mean, apparently a hitting partner is a very big deal. You know?
It's like a priest.
Hello, am I in?
Yes, you're in.
And, okay.
Yes, so we have another real fan. Janina is here today to greet us with her presence. She's a recent new fan, so I love new fans and I love old fans, so don't think I discriminate. And Janina,
I thought you were my fan. What's going on here?
And I'm also your fan. They're fighting over me. This is how great real fan is about people. We're all about the hate, but we hate viciously. And we love accordingly. So we were talking about Murray's recent comments about, you know, that he, you know, his life isn't so... Well, let me ask. He didn't moan so much as always. But he basically, in essence, spoke about the fact that, you know, right now is a sort of a difficult time because Amelie Murray's more. She's the Fed Cup captain for France. She wasn't with him, and, you know, he sort of, like, was speaking as a post after his loss to Bona Courage when he got that beatdown, 6-1, 6-3. So he was saying, you know, I'm looking for a new assistant coach to work when Amelie's not around, and it's difficult when he go home to Glasgow or Scotland, well, Scotland, Glasgow, Scotland, that, you know, he doesn't have a hidden partner, you know, all this sort of, a litany of excuses is always the Murray madness. So, what do you have to say on that? I mean, maybe I'm being too harsh here, you know. I'm indifferent to Murray in a whole. I'm not his fan, I'm not a hater, except when he plays Federer. But...
I like Andy. I think he tends to moan because he's British, and that's what British people do.
Oh, means that I... He's only British when he wins Wimbledon. He's Scottish
Stop.
When he
Stop.
It is the gospel truth.
Well, they just sound kind of wishy-washy and moody in general. So I think that we misconstrue some of the things that he says. And maybe it's true. Maybe there's nobody there worthy of him and his Wimbledon trophy. Who knows?
Did you read the piece? I didn't, so I can't even comment. I can only comment on sort of general Murray-ness.
I didn't read it either, but I'm totally commenting.
I'm going to say this. I mean, like, please, I don't think that I bring people who don't read. They have a lot going on in their own life, and they do read generally a lot of tennis. But from what I read, and unfortunately I can't find the link anymore, because I made notes as I read it, and I forgot to keep the link, save it in my favorites, to pass it on. But to me, I mean, I'm just going to say that if the ATP had a unquote coaching rule, Andy Murray would have had 14 majors by now. I'm just saying. Well, actually, no. I take that back, because they don't have coaching at the majors. But if they had that rule, Andy Murray would have more than two majors in his pocket. Might not be 14, maybe I exaggerate. But he probably would have five or six. Because, I mean,
poor Andy.
He's so temperamental. I mean, like, sometimes I think this is like a diva. Like, he's one of those, like, it's like a pop diva. You know, he goes into the room and it's just like, oh my God, the water is not room temperature. I don't want it. I can't. No. Oh my God, I feel this air coming in. My whistle. Oh my God, my whistle rings. My whistle register is not working today. I'm not performing. I'm not, no. None of that. No.
I'm dying.
I mean, like, this is all, because he always complains. I mean, like, granted that some of the times, I would admit that he did have a legitimate qualm against Djokovic in the final. You know, but he didn't even complain then. He just simply said, you know, well, I should know better. But, and I agree, he should have known better. But I just think he just allows so many things to just get in his way for no apparent reason. And Andy Murray is what? He has two major titles. Now, you think if he picks up the phone and calls the guy who's ranked 60 in the world, wherever he is, he isn't going to show up at Andy Murray's doorstep to go hang with him and to hit with him? I mean, seriously, Roger Federer hits with everybody and their grandmother, except anyone in the top five or top ten. He hits with Dimitrov. So to me, Andy Murray complaining about the cold and all this business, I mean, a lot of these top guys have operated at one time or the other without a coach. And he himself has done pretty well without a coach for a limited amount of time last year. So I don't think he needs someone to be like, Andy, this is what you need to do. This is, you know what I mean? His mother plays tennis. His mother's a tennis coach. His brother plays tennis. So he's acting like, you know.
Listen, you've just got to understand that Andy Murray is there to provide context. He's there to provide emotional context that we don't normally get from other players, to give us the real feelings that are happening in people on court, the frustration, so that you can live and die with each point with him. That's what Andy Murray is there for.
I think that's what Donald Young and company are there for.
No, a Murray meltdown is fantastic. How can you not love Andy on court, like, beating his legs and yelling, fuck? It's great. It's great. And all them teeth come out, and it's like, rawr.
That's a lot less monster coming out.
I appreciate it.
But, you know,
drama too. I appreciate the drama of Andy. I think, you know what? I mean, listen, Andy's a fair player for the most part. You know, that's my biggest pet peeve. If I feel like you don't play fair, then I can't really take you. But in general, Andy beats himself up. He gets himself in trouble. So I can I can be there with him. I will laugh along and enjoy the show. That's his show. That's what he's there for.
Wimbledon 2012, I swore he was going to beat Federer. I was like, no way Federer's going to beat this boy. He is amazing. He's playing amazing tennis in that first set and a piece in the second set. But Murray meltdown happened, and I was like, yes, God, praise Jesus. And I'm just like, dependable on a rock. Unfortunately, that shit didn't happen 3 weeks later at the Olympic final. He beat Federer like he stole his Wimbledon title last time around. I mean, he treated Federer like Federer didn't even know. Like, Federer had accidentally tripped over the semifinals and stumbled into the finals. I mean,
no, he treated Federer like Federer played a very long match the day before and got tired, which is unusual. Tennis,
which is,
you
true,
know.
Which is true. It's the reason again why I can always be on that Del Potro bandwagon. He beat him in 2009 US Open, and then he tired a man out from having a double gold medal. But we can take the silver. We can take the silver because we got gold in 2008. But, I mean, Murray to me, I mean, I want to get on his bandwagon sometimes, but I just can't. I mean, Murray just seems like a...
He doesn't need your bandwagon. A big old bandwagon.
You're right. Sure. You don't need my support.
I like Murray.
He doesn't need my support.
I like him. Can I just tell you, though, that my tennis buddy that I go to a tournament with fell asleep at a Murray match? He hates Murray, and we're not allowed to watch Murray anymore. If I want to watch Murray, I have to go by myself.
But I would say my problem with Murray, too, is that if he channeled that aggression into some sort of, like, positive energy. Like, when Serena has a meltdown, there's either two kind of meltdown. There's either a meltdown, like, she's going to go crazy and start ripping winners all over the place, or she's going to go Laquanda crazy and she start, you know, you're going to eat this fucking tennis ball crazy. You know, where she start going... Where she
we don't talk about that.
But she by the way, just so people know, I did not make up that name Laquanda. This is not like Peaches from the Way. Laquanda is the name of one of her personalities she mentions, okay? So before people start coming to get my wig, Laquanda is the name Serena gave her naughty girl. She said Laquanda doesn't get to come out anymore. Laquanda is straight up Compton. So, I mean, if Murray was able to channel that aggression, like when Djokovic gets upset, when
stop it. Stop right now.
The aggression somewhere.
Stop it. Djokovic is the worst when he gets upset. It's best for him to stay calm. The only person who performs well when they're upset is Rafa Nadal. Djokovic can barely get it together when he's upset.
There's two kinds of upset with Djokovic. There's the upset where he tries to figure out, I'm upset, I'm not playing well, I'm going to try to trick my way into winning. And there's the upset when he completely melts down. That does happen. Like, I think in the French Open final, he was completely at loss last year. He didn't know what the fuck to do against Nadal. He was just like, this match is over, okay? Fuck. He's looking up in his box. I like when he opens his eyes really wide, like, I need to see this shit more. Because it's like, to me, it's like, boo, you're playing. You're not a spectator, okay? All you need to see is right in front of you, okay? On the code. Don't worry about what's going on in the box. But Murray doesn't give me any of that. Murray just remains this kind of a... But you're right. Maybe he's just there to provide context. Maybe he's supposed to be the even man out, you know? He's supposed to make the three or four, you know? It's four horsemen of apocalypse, kind of. A tennis apocalypse, you know? You know, maybe he's the guy that everybody likes. You know, like, he's the one guy that everybody talks to in the crowd because, you know, Federer doesn't really like the Dals. Nadal doesn't like Federer. Something like Djokovic. So, you know, Nadal, Murray is the peacemaker. He's the friendly.
Murray is not a peacemaker.
I'm just trying to give him some prophecy, okay? Look.
He doesn't know what he wants. He doesn't have a clue. He just, you know, he's Murray. He just gets upset and he yells fuck. And then he's done. And he tends to play well, I think, after he gets a little pissy. Maybe his mommy should coach him.
I think Judy decides, you know what, I can only deal with this baby once. After 9 months pushing him out, and after he passed toddler stage and teething, I don't want any more of this shit. She dropped him, what, at 17? So.
She did? Oh, God.
Yeah. I just think she pushed him at one point, you know, like, she knows, but if your mama don't want you, I mean, let me not put it that way. Let me take that back. If his mother has decided it is best to maintain her relationship with her born, with her second born, that it isn't, oh, wait. He has a sister, doesn't he? I don't know where the arrangement is, but her son, her second son, she can't work with him on a professional level. I think we should accept her decision. Because it might be, you know, she might be having to go down on court and slap him and put him over her lap and give him some spank. And we don't want to see that. No. We do not want to see that on court. I'm just saying. It will be a mess. But moving on, I want to talk about the... I thought there was like a 24-hour rabbit hole of tennis last week. I'm going to just list what I thought went crazy. One, Grigor Dimitrov lost 6-love, 0-6, got a bagel by Harrison the third set in Acapulco. Then less than 24 hours later, Bona Courage beat Murray 6-1, 6-3. And mind you, Courage didn't face a break point. Actually, he was never broken, sorry. And then... in Doha, to round it off, Petra Kvitova, never to be out of the party, she decides to get bageled by Carla Suarez Navarro, having won the first set 6-3. All I can say is that when I saw these results, and I saw these matches, unfortunately, I was like, what the fuck? What the holy tennis fuck is going on here? I mean, I can admit that any of these players can lose to their opponent, except Grigor Dimitrov, but I mean, the scoreline just defied logic in my mind. I don't know if you have any sort of input, ladies, on this matter.
Well, we all know that Petra can be a little bipolar, and was it hot? Because, you know, she can't handle the heat, she can't breathe, so
actually,
we'll give her a pass. Oh, crap. That's right. That's where everyone was wearing pants, right?
Yes.
Oops. Petra doesn't get a pass.
No. Someone says, actually, this is not the actual quote, but it's something along this line. They say, if it's not grass, Petra has to catch her ass. Something along those lines.
Listen, you know what? I don't care about any of those things that you just said. The most interesting thing to me is that the...
I'm sorry, you're going out, Andre. Hello?
I'm here.
We're having technical difficulty with Andre. We are a podcast on a budget. By when I say budget, we got no money. So, Andre? I believe you said something about Ferrer, Andre. Oh.
Well,
technical.
Yes, I know she said she doesn't care about anything that you said.
Yes.
And she was moving on.
Maybe the technical world doesn't like that. Andre? And we can't fix this problem right about now. So. Hopefully we can get her before the end of the podcast and we can revisit this issue. But what I wanted to talk about this week, another issue I think I wanted to deal with, was Nishikori's performance in Acapulco. I thought that he was doing jack shit all week long. But... I guess that by extension, by Nishikori, I just want to sort of like talk about the young players that are coming up.
Oh, hello.
Hey. Hello?
What happened?
Andreen? Let me see if I can. I think I'm getting a message somewhere. Oh, okay. Okay, she's got difficulty, so Andreen is out of the podcast, I guess, for now. Unfortunately, I was really looking forward to hear what she had to say about last bit. But what I wanted to talk about before we get into our, I guess, big story of the week, well, big-ish story. I don't say it's really big, but it's the young players that are coming up. To me, we had Harrison and Bona Koric had their best week ever. Week before last, I think it was. Young had a great week. He made the semifinals and the finals of her two tournaments. And everyone, at least the years out to promote, you know, like, oh my God, they're going to next big thing. I know Koric in particular was labeled as being the next Djokovic. And Federer said, stop that. Do not do that to him. Let him find his own way, basically, and not, you know, put this other pressure on him. And for me, I just think, you know, it's sort of like, I guess the media loves to write about stories about, you know, the next big thing. They get bored and tired of the top players. So they're looking for the next big story, and they're trying to be, you know, we found the next great hope already. But I just think it's a little bit of, I think it's disingenuous and very problematic to be putting so much pressure on a lot of these young players, and then they lose their way. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's a good pressure or a bad pressure, but I just think it's crazy. And then you have people start saying, you know, oh my God, they're great. I'm just like, Ryan Harrison won a match, okay? He won a match. He beat Trout, okay? No, Ryan Harrison is still ranked in the 200, I think it is. He's trying to make his way up out of that place, but let's not put any pressure on the ball. Let him just get into the top 100. Let him just not have to qualify to these low scrub tournaments. I mean, it's where was they in Acapulco? Okay, it's an ATP 500, and he had to play qualifier. I think he had got a wild card into the qualification. So really, let him work his way up to the top, and let him do this at his own pace, and not put this much pressure. But you know,
I feel like I've been waiting for Ryan Harrison to do something for a really long time. And it's just not happening. I remember watching him take a set off of Djokovic once, and I thought, okay. But then that was it. And then he just, like, lost. And then for a long time, I felt like he just had the worst luck ever. It seemed like his first round match, no matter where he played on what surface, was a top dog, and he was going to get his ass handed to him no matter what. And it seemed like that happened for a long time. But then somebody gave me the stats on that, and actually I was completely wrong. Must have just been the matches that I watched. I don't know. But I feel like I've just been waiting and waiting and waiting for years. And he's not doing anything. Maybe he's just too small.
You know, he's
maybe
he's 22.
He's 22? Well, what age should he go pro? Like 15?
Well, this is the thing. This is the thing I wanted to point out, that I think the problem is Donald Young turned pro when he was 14. I remember when he was 15, he got a wild card entrance ticket to the 2005 U.S. Open. And I remember watching it, and, you know, the crowd were there, and they were like, oh my God, it's him. What's he doing now? And I mean, these are people watching the match, and they're like, what's going on? He's amazing. And he was getting his ass beat by some low scrub South American. And no disrespect to the South Americans. I mean, there's tons of you, but it wasn't a top player. It was, you know, one of those many Argentine players. And he was getting his ass beat. And yet they were cheering up. So much pressure on these kids. And I know, and I think Donald Young issues is beyond the pressure.
It's oh, absolutely. But, you know, as far as the media is concerned, we are, like, as Americans, completely desperate for the next big thing. We have nobody.
Exactly. And they don't let these people breathe. So Ryan Harrison has to deal with the pressure that, you know, he has to wake up every morning and play like he's going to be the next Agassi, the next Sampras, the next Chang. Even the next Query would do them fine for now. But still, he can't even play. He can't even play his Ryan Harrison game, because at the Acapulco, he had a complete meltdown after winning the first set 6-4, 6-3 against David Ferrer. Now, mind you, David Ferrer turned into some super beast after dropping
beast mode.
Single game.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it was like Blanka from Street Fighter, and he was just like perfect. Like he just dragged Harrison all over that court. And Harrison, I thought that it was part of the con. Ferrer was playing better tennis than he was in the first set, but Harrison just completely stopped playing. Like he just was just wasn't trying to concentrate on the matches. But
well,
I think that's
what
the pressure that he.
I remember when he played Djokovic, it was in Cincinnati, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, and he got a set, and then he just went away. And I didn't feel like it was because Djokovic, of course, he's, you know, he can go to that other level and turn into the Serbian devil right. And do all of that, but he just goes away. He can't focus. I'm tired of waiting for him.
I think, you know, American tennis players and American tennis fans, and that's one of the reasons why at a subsequent podcast I want to deal with the fans. American tennis fans, I mean, not you, but in general, American tennis fans, especially when I go to the U.S. Open, they're just concerned sitting there rabid, foaming at the mouth for the next American tennis player, putting all this pressure on these players. The same thing happened to that girl, Coco, was it Coco or Kiki?
Coco Vandeweghe?
Coco Vandeweghe. No, no, no.
What the about Melanie Udan, who just lost, like, today in some qualies somewhere?
This girl who just won, she won her first round, she beat the bulk of her in the first round at U.S. Open. I forgot her name. She was a young girl, 15-year-old.
Oh, Valerie?
No, no, no.
The black girl?
Skinny, no, white girl. Blonde hair. Very, like, hyphenated name, like a Coco, Kiki, or a...
Wee Wee, Cece.
Cece, that's it. Cece Alice. That's it, thank you.
Yeah!
They had all this, like... press right up, and I was just like, why don't you people let this little girl breathe? For God's sake. She just wants... No, people... Great tennis players do not become great tennis players by winning a match.
Right.
They win matches. And they have to win quality matches. Isn't the fact that Ryan Harrison isn't being a factor at the main... Is the fact that Ryan Harrison isn't even winning matches?
No, he doesn't win anything.
Exactly. If Ryan Harrison is supposed to be, if I'm supposed to buy into these hype for a lot of these players, week in, week out, being consistent, get into the quarterfinals, every once in a while sneak into the finals, and win a title, granted the competition is really because anywhere you go on the men's tour, any tournament you play, there's at least going to be one or two top 10 players.
Right.
In that draw. So it's difficult for them to, you know, and they're very solid top 10 players. But if you have, like, look, David Ferrer, Nishikori showed up in Acapulco, along with Dimitrov. Now, beating Dimitrov, he got lucky. Let's just say that he played brilliant tennis. Then he has to come up against David Ferrer, and then Nishikori. And these are players who are not going to let this opportunity go by, you know, by squeezing a free title and letting some little scrub.
right.
So I'm not expecting Harrison to be winning major title, but I'm expecting Harrison not to be ranked 100 and something. Harrison should be at 22. He's supposed to be moving up. I think anyone's calling me, but yeah, I expect Harrison to be doing a lot better than he's doing, and I expect the same thing even. When players get great opportunity like Raonic and Dimitrov, when they come to the big moment, they have more experience, they have more talent. They just suck in the big moments.
They really do. They do.
I mean, Kenny Shikori, I'm gonna give him. I mean, like, I would say he was probably a bit exhausted in the U.S. Open final, but he didn't even win a set, Kay. Win a set. That was a gift. Listen to me. I expected that match to be an all-out war, blood on the court. I expected at one point they're supposed to go over and be like, motherfucker, I am not letting this major. There is no Djokovic, there's no Nadal, there is no Federer,
right.
There is no Murray. I am taking this motherfucking, you have to rip this out of my cold dead hand. That's what I wanted to hear and see. What I just
and it was
saw was
horrible.
He just showed up because he didn't want to be absent. You know, like, teacher, I'm just here for school today because, you know, mother said I have to leave the house, so I'm just showing up in this finals just because, you know, Michael Chang said I need to. He didn't do shit. And
who won the U.S. Open?
Chilich, Mary.
Oh, God. It was so forgettable.
I mean, I'm going to Marin did what he needed to do. He got that title. He beat Federer, and he played solid tennis. But Ken Nishikori, having seen the final live, Ken Nishikori didn't even try to do anything special or magical on court.
Well, he looked like his legs were lead. He was done. He should have borrowed the Serbian devil's egg. He should have recuperated in that thing.
Love, you better be careful because, you know, the fans of Djokovic get really upset. As a matter of fact, I think one unfriended me when I asked about that issue. I was just like, you know, that hyper sleep chamber Djokovic used to sleep in? Can we talk about that? You know, where he's allegedly, well, I don't want to use the word blood doping, but it was allowing more oxygen, you know, increasing the red blood cells. To allow more oxygen and cut down on lactic acid. There was no response.
Of course not. We don't talk about those things. We do not talk about those things.
But, you know. Anyway, all I'm simply saying is that I just think sometimes a lot of pressure is put on the young folks, the one trying to up and come. And I think perhaps we need to. Because for me, one of the things I'd be more interested in hearing from or talking about is not the guy who is number one all the time. Are the supposedly number 100 who just won a title or just got a decent win one day. What I'm interested in is the people who are in the middle, you know what I mean? What do they say? What are their struggles on the tour? You know, they're not making all this money. I mean, look, Sam Querrey now has to be a millionaire matchmaker to give himself some publicity. Why is
oh
that?
My gosh. I mean, that is so bad. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, I mentioned all that. I'm just like, look, pardon my French, because you're a lady. I'm like, if you're a professional athlete, then you can't get free pussy. I mean, I don't know what the fuck you're doing with your life.
Well, come on. I mean, have a good look.
And I wasn't even sure if he was a millionaire to begin with. I'm like, Sam, a millionaire? I mean, like, he may have, but apparently he's won $5.8 million in his career since 2006, which averaged about $650,000 a year on average. But apparently that qualifies you to be a millionaire, but, you know.
Well.
But anyway.
It's got to be a publicity stunt, right, him going on that show? It has to be.
He probably pays some good money, and he gets publicity, you know, he gets some ladies, and maybe women might be throwing up, you know, maybe it's just a part of the game.
I guess.
But the big story of the day today is... Oh, no. The big story is... Yes. So, this is in contrast to an update that we spoke about in our first podcast. I just want to, before I go any further, I want to have a correction, because last podcast, I think I noted that Victoria Azarenka fired Sam Sumic, but I was incorrect. Sam Sumic fired Azarenka. Apparently, according to one of the tennis journalists I followed and listened to during tennis coverage, after she lost the fourth round match, I think it is, to Sibulkova, Sam Sumic approached Azarenka and said, girl, bye, girl. Gotta go.
Bye, Felicia.
Bye, Felicia. Arrivederci. Whatever they say in... Oh, he's French, so I guess he said au revoir, boo. Anyway, and then we... So... I think I got that wrong. And the big news of today is that we spoke about one of the things that was that where is Sasha by Jan? Is Sasha and Serena still together? And we found out officially, like I suspected, that they were not together. And Janina, if I would, what might I say, she encouraged me to send out a tweet to Serena and Sasha asking what's the dealio. So I would like to believe that because about and Sasha, they felt compelled, and I use those in air quotes, to give a response today, and they did. And Janina, want to do the honors by telling us what's the big deal with Serena and Sasha?
They are over, and Sasha jumped camp into the Vika train, and I'm not happy.
Yes. Yes, fans, well, I'm indifferent.
I'm not happy.
Big Sasha, Sasha Bajan, sexy Sasha, as I like to call him, you know, definitely could get it, is now working with Victoria Azarenka as a hidden partner, having left Serena, who I believe has herself a French hidden partner, I'm not sure, and apparently I have to learn his name. And so she has now added two new staff and changed to her roster in the last, in less than a month, actually. Wim Fissett, I think it is. He's French former coach for, I believe, Kim Clijsters and Simona Halep quite recently. He's now working with Azarenka, and she added Sasha Bajan as a hidden partner. And the Twitter world exploded. I have to say, Twitter is, there's an expression, brevity is the source of wit, but I think Twitter is the source of destruction. I mean, 140 characters. It's fucking people live up from crazy. I mean, when this tweet came out, people lost their fucking minds. And you said you were unhappy about the situation. Mind telling us why?
Because I just feel like Serena and Sasha belong together, and that if they split, they just need to split and go their separate ways. Sasha doesn't get to go tell Serena's secrets to somebody else, because you know that's what Vika wants, because she can't handle her, and she's grasping at straws by trying to work with Sasha. Girl needs to get a life, go back to Red Food, do whatever. I don't know, but I don't like it. I just feel so betrayed. Sasha and life. Serena, it's what should be.
Look.
No, it's not okay. It's so not okay.
At that point, about, you know, it being, you know, Serena's secret. But the secret to Serena isn't a secret. Azarenka, you got no serve, girl.
True.
That isn't going to help you with your serve. Okay? You need a coach. You need a new arm, you need to rework some shit. I don't know, girl. Maybe she can try it. Maybe she might tell Sasha, might tell her Serena likes, you know, to walk on one side and this is what it is. I can see that. Maybe, you know, but I don't really think that there is much Azarenka can do to beat Serena. Every Serena match I've seen against Azarenka, it's mostly Serena has been letting Azarenka into the match. It has been Serena. Nothing particular Azarenka's been doing, per se. I mean, there was one time, one of the reasons why I liked Azarenka is that she was a aggressive player. She's a very aggressive style, and I think the first time I remember seeing her distinctly was in the 2009 Australian Open. I think when she almost fainted and she wouldn't give up. And I was like, you know what? I respect a woman who was trying to stay out in that hot Melbourne sun, you know, trying to beat Serena ass, especially when she has the upper hand. She don't care if she leave here in a stretcher. She must have that W next to her name. But it wasn't to be. And the next year she came back, and she really played up her strength. And she, for a set and a half, well, a set and two breaks, she was up 4-love, I think it was.
I think so.
Yeah, and then she got her ass handed to her. And Serena came back. Serena was hitting winners and aces. I mean...
Well, you know, I am in the camp that believes that there are very few people who beat Serena. If someone wins against her, she's not playing her best, she's having a bad day, and that's part of the game and it happens. But there, I think the people who could beat her consistently are gone, and that was Clijsters and Hennet. They're gone. Right. There's nobody on tour that can hang with her at this very moment when she's at her best.
I think it's a lack of variety in a lot of the women game, because Kim and Henna, Cheat and Justine, had a lot of variety to their game. Kim can run around that backhand. She was very fit. They understood the dimension of the court better, and they can do a lot of different shots with higher percentages. A lot of the other girls would try a little something here and there, hit them, usually miss more than it hit. And Serena was able to think. And also, one of the things, too, I'm not sure that Serena has definitely improved her fitness being more consistent with her fitness throughout the year than she is in her younger days against Kim and Justine.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if all things were equal and they did show up today, I think Serena would have the edge. I would say that. I mean, I might be wrong because it might be a psychological thing. I think part of the Justine issue was part of a psychological thing.
The handshake or yeah. whatever it was.
So, but I mean, to me, I don't really see this as a big deal. I am of the camp that, you know, Sasha Bajan has to eat. You got to get paid. And, you know, if Serena feels that she no longer needs his services, and I think it's something she would, in my opinion, I think it's a decision that she made, not he made.
Oh, I agree.
I did like them together. I thought that they had a very nice brother-sister relationship. And I think the more people that are in Serena's camp that, you know, are, like, less judgy and less problematic. I mean, being a superstar, you know, you kind of need close friends in your quarters. And I thought they had that, but apparently it wasn't that. It wasn't that close because Serena felt confident enough to say arrivederci. Now, I know
I really wonder if Sasha, because there was some rumor of him being injured around the time of the Australian Open, and I wonder if he was. And I wonder if because he was injured and he couldn't be there to hit with her, and then, you know, Mr. Patrick, however you say his last name, brought in this other guy and she liked him. And maybe that was what opened up her eyes to say, maybe I need to try something new. And that's fair, but I still don't like Sasha with Mika. I'll never like it.
I would buy that if it were different circumstances. I mean, clearly he's that injured that he can't go and help Azarenka. And if Azarenka is trying to be the top, back in the top one or top 10, top being back at the top of the game and win majors again, clearly, she's not going to hire some handicapped, awesome man who's two shakes from being in a wheelchair to be a hitting partner.
No, but I do remember when people were asking, where was Sasha at the Australian Open, she did say that he was injured. And yeah, she did say that he was still a part of her team, but he just couldn't be there. And then she had to have somebody to hit with. So Patrick brings in this other guy, and maybe it just worked. I don't know.
I get that. Getting a substitute, yes. But, you know, I mean, I don't know. To me, I would hate to think that's the reason why she fired this guy. Because if he was good for one, and he just missed one important date, I don't think you should be that unforgiving to be like, you know what?
Well, Serena's a bitch. Let's keep it real. She's a bitch. Everybody knows it.
They're
if you've been within... Yeah, she's going to do whatever she feels that's going to advance her career the best. And you know what? Maybe she'll hang out with this other French guy for some months and realize she wants Sasha back. I bet his ass goes back if she wants him. I'm just saying.
Because then it's smart. She signed up. She had them sign a paper. Anyway, you can't make them sign something. But
did she?
Well, I mean, it would be called slavery if you force someone to work for you. A little bit. You might be called slavery. It might not be worked so well. But usually, but I don't think tennis players have an injunction clause that you can't work for certain people, you know. But Maria Sharapova is sitting there thinking, Jesus Christ, I should.
What? Right? Poor Maria.
All this while trying to get myself in the right coaching space. I should have tried to go steal someone who works with her, but
totally.
Apparently, well, Serena benefit because they mostly work with their parents, so their parents are not going to go work for somebody else.
True.
So, I mean, they can't borrow coaches from someone else, but I mean, I did suspect that since I've long suspected earlier this year that she was going to fire him or the partnership was going to end soon, that he would in fact work for a top player. Like, when I realized that, to me, the same thing with Sam Simic and Jeannie Bouchard. Jeannie Bouchard has a game that I think is similar to Azarenka, and that's what she wants with more consistency. So, of course, she's going to try to work with someone who can bring that to her game. Azarenka is trying to move up the game and be like a Serena, but she can't. She needs that ability to... She needs someone to... But, I mean, I'm not sure if a game playing style can change that much, really. I mean, I think she's probably set in her ways. Her serve is horrible. because of that hard serve. Venus had so many looks at a second serve in that Doha semifinal, but apparently Venus had other issues and other plans. Apparently winning wasn't what it was. So, like I always say, if Venus is not interested in winning, I shouldn't care when she loses. So...
Well, there you go.
You know, I tried to stop caring. But I was happy that she did make it. But, you know, I really, to me, it's, you know, Andreen said, oh, yeah, you know, apparently a hidden partner seemed to be a priest, you know, so much to think, you know. But hidden partners come and go, you know, but a hidden
partner. Well, maybe that's why I feel so bad about it, because I feel like Sasha has been there for so long. It just seems wrong for him to be with somebody else.
True.
He's been there for so long.
But maybe it might be more, but I'm more of the camp. I would like to believe that if they ended their relationship, it might have been for something more than that. Than just being he missed it, he was in Berlin, he couldn't show up in Melbourne. Maybe, I don't know, I mean, I'm not trying to insinuate anything Serena fans and, you know, the Serena stands, but I noticed, if I'm not mistaken, Austin wasn't in Melbourne. She's an older woman, and maybe she doesn't want to travel that much because, I mean, she's been traveling with her daughters for over 20 years. So maybe she's just like, you know what, fuck this shit. I'm trying to go down to Melbourne this year. Fuck it. I see you in California. I see you in Miami, girl.
And right.
But, I mean, I don't know if there might be some, there is some talk among her people that, you know, maybe Patrick Mouratoglou is putting on that jumbie. Let me not use that word. It's a Western word. They're putting on that kind of crazy, you know, Svengali cult-ish moves on Serena. Because there have been instances on the WTA where a female player gets caught up in a coach and turns into this crazy Patty Schneider. Comes to mind. I mean, if your husband is your coach and he can't say, boo, girl, that hair needs to be tamed, there's some crazy shit going on there. You know what I mean? So maybe.
Well, do Patrick and Serena acknowledge that they're a couple these days?
Well, I don't know if they acknowledge it, but I think we're not stupid and blind to see that.
They're fucking.
You feel like Joe. You feel like Joe and I'm Blackish. He's tapping that. It is. I mean, did you see that little canoodling when Venus was playing a Radwanska?
And yes.
Challenge. Listen to me.
Yes.
I don't have a coach, but I would hate to think I'm snuggling up next to my coach like that. I mean,
well, I watched that little tiny piece of video about 20 times, and all I saw was Patrick all up in her shit. That's what you do when you're intimate with somebody, when you're a couple.
Exactly.
They're a couple.
When you know that there is no zone, there is no personal space that you can enter, he knows he has 100% access to that. But, look, she's a grown woman, he's a grown man, I think he's free and disengaged. She's
and they're doing the grown-up dance.
They're doing a grown-up dance. You know, keep it safe, keep it legit. And, I mean, her results have been on par. I mean, they've been where they need to be. I don't think Serena needs to be playing week in, week out and winning all these regular tour tournaments. I think she's committed to winning the 22, 23. But, you see, my problem is I think she has become obsessed with that, of getting to 23. Not that she's at 19.
Right.
And I think that might be a problem. Personally, I think that's crazy. I think that's why we're going through this Indian Wells bullshit. She's trying to create a legacy, almost like a Beyonce-esque construction of my legacy at this point. And it's coming off as being manufactured. And I think no matter if Serena gets to 22 or 24 or even stay at 19, no one will really and truly deny that she is the greatest tennis player. One of
right.
the I mean, it's very difficult to have an argument about the greatest, no matter whatever sport or arena you put it into. Someone would always come, either an old challenger would show up or a new challenger, or people have different views about it. Because I personally thought that Pete Sampras was a great player, wasn't the greatest, but he's supposed to be the greatest tennis player, but he never won the French Open. That's a natural
right.
thing for people. But he got 14 majors. Federer came by and surpassed that, and he won one French Open. And for everyone, that's still not enough. Then Nadal is there. And then there's some crazy people talking about, you know, we're in the Djokovic era. So, I mean, so this debate about the greatest would always be, you cannot quantify the greatest player. You know what I mean? There isn't anything I think she can do. She has done so much. Even if, like I always say, if Serena put down their racket today, they would still be the legends that they are. And that's undeniable what they've done to the sport. And Serena, all this semantics, is just kind of like, girl, no, bye. Let me give you a little sad horn for that bullshit. It's too much. It's really too much. And if this firing of Sasha is in construction of, like, you know, something to create, you know, this goal to get 22 or 23 to beat Steffi Graf, it's kind of pathetic, because I really thought that, you know, you're right, maybe it might be, you know, but it's life. These things happen. Sports are no different to people's personalities and whims and fancies. So, I mean, it's not hurting me. Federer's still alive. He's still playing, you know, so I can't be mad. Venus has avoided all of this bullshit, and she's not getting involved in this crap.
Has she said anything at all? Anything?
What's that?
Has she said anything at all about Indian Wells?
Well, she said that she wasn't invited.
Invited or going?
No, she said that they never invited her to come. When they spoke, when they reached out to Serena, they never reached out. And she said, I support Serena in everything that you do. That's one of the reasons why I said, you know, that all this talk about Indian Wells and Serena and all this fight for justice, whatever, I'm just like, look, Indian Wells, you're full of shit. You're full of shit. Yeah. Serena not showing up with it. If one show up, it's bullshit. The only home, none of them is that. They're both playing tennis. And
I'm kind of still waiting for her to pull out at the last minute.
Actually, I'm probably, here one or two things is going to happen. I think she's either going to pull out because she's injured and she's all over the place and exhausted. She's going to lose early. I don't imagine she's going to win this title.
No way. There's going to be way too many emotions on that court when she steps out the first day. She's probably going out in her first match.
And too much noise and media attention, and she doesn't do well with all of that.
Nope, she is going to fizzle fast.
She just needed to just show up at Indian Wells. She didn't need to come in with a big brass band and all that madness. But we would see. I'm not wishing her bad. All I'm hoping that would happen is that no matter whatever happened in Indian Wells, Venus wins Miami. And then I'm good for the year.
There you go.
She's at Wimbledon. And I'm good. I'm cute for the year. I'm good. I wouldn't ask really for anything. Actually, I might ask them to Venus win Wimbledon or the U.S. Open one more time. But if they can't give me that, I can deal with Miami and a semis at Wimbledon losing to Serena.
There you go. Perfect scenario.
Can't lose to anybody else. Grass court queen Venus cannot lose to anybody else on Wimbledon ever again. No Petra. Well, I could. No Petra. No Petra. You got last year. You can't have this year.
She won't.
But anyway, any last words? I think I went over an hour. I had a clock this time. Hopefully, it's not an hour and a half. It's an hour and 15 minutes. I think or just about. So, any last words?
You know what, Sasha? Fuck you. That's it. That's all I've got.
Oh my God. Sasha Bajan, sexy Sasha. Here is one fan saying that she doesn't like this split. I'm indifferent. I'm just happy that you're with a top player that I would be seeing you around. Had you gone to someone like a Alize Cornet, I'd have been like, fuck you, Sasha, because nobody checking for Cornet matches. Nobody checking. No one's going to spot you around.
Just like, well, Vika's going to have a lot more spectators just because of Sasha, because he is a nice piece of eye candy.
But I know Sasha knows where the money is. Alize Cornet only has strength for Serena, apparently.
True.
She popped against anybody else. But, you know, I was happy that Danny went Murray fight Danny, and Danny went to Burdich. I was like, yes, you know, I like seeing Danny. He's cute, you know. I would see him around at matches. But, you know, so, Sasha, you got to give a good gig, and Sasha is no fool. He isn't trying to go hang out with no broke girl. Azarenka got money. She got that Rolex money. She got that Nike money. So, you know, Serena had money, and she was probably playing top dollars. No, he can't go back and go try to work for pittance, you know. He was making money to work for pennies. So he had to either go to Maria, which if he had gone to Maria, someone would have put a contract on his life.
Possibly me.
It's my thing. The next thing to do if you want to stick around in women game, you know, and I'm sure he's probably getting lots of pussy. Women just like, oh my God, Sasha! Here's my number. Here's my room number. Here's my PIN number. Here's my social security number. He worked with a high-profile lady. So he
Are we sure about what team Sasha plays on, though?
He was married. He said he's an ex-husband. So I believe.
I know plenty of gay men who have been married. Come on.
True, but you know what? Look, I would be all happy if he's playing on Team G, but Team G Unit. But I don't know. I mean, like, in Sasha, I just maybe actually because Serena does sort of insinuate that, but you know, he's like a brother to me. You know that kind of thing. And maybe now I have to look at him a little bit closer. But you know, I mean, look, he got money. Clearly, he has money, so I wouldn't mind. But you know, I give him a whirl.
Let me know how that works out for you. I can't wait to hear it.
You can't sleep. If you're going to sleep with the help, these are the kind of help you got to sleep with, okay? You got to sleep with help.
Absolutely.
You know? So if you can't fuck the boss, sleep with the help who's making money. So, anywho, so this has been Reels Podcast number 2, fans. Thanks to my guests, Andrine and Janina. Let's give them a round of applause. Don't forget, we're looking for sponsors so we can make some examples. And don't forget, you can check me out on YouTube, Real Tennis Fans, also blog, WordPress, Facebook, and Twitter. I need a lot more Twitter followers and Facebook likes. I have 100 Facebook likes and 202 Twitter followers. So hopefully we can get more with this podcast. I'm sorry it went over a little bit longer than expected, but conversation was juicy. Hopefully you're enjoying it nonetheless. But we'll work hard again next week. Maybe we can cut out the results. But you know, if I'm talking about tennis, I gotta tell you who win or who lose, right? It makes no sense. I can't I can't just be talking about myself, you know, how I feel, you know. This isn't all about feelings. It's about real tennis and real tennis fans. So thank you, listeners. I appreciate everything. And hopefully I get some more positive feedback and some constructive criticism. All you fucking trolls out there know me trying to say I hate the fucking show. And that's it. No, I hate the fucking show because X, Y, and Z, okay? Trolls and monsters, you know, if you try to come for my wig, I would snatch your purse and beat you in your face with it, okay? So thank you for listening to Real Tennis Fans, and have a good evening, morning, afternoon. And if you're working out to the gym at this, hope you're enjoying and having a laugh. Good night, morning, day.